Welcome back to the Next Big Thing podcast. I'm your host, Sam Osborne. Today, we're talking size inclusivity with Taylor Long from Nomads Swimwear. You guys, you have to listen to this episode. It is such a good one because Taylor is so knowledgeable about this space. She has modeled before. She went to design school. And the things that she talks about and in what she learned in design school and also kind of how they prime you to only think a certain way for designing for certain sizes blew my mind. Like, no one talks about these things. And I'm so happy to have Taylor on the podcast because she is enlightening every listener about what it really means to be a size inclusive brand and how we can all shape our thinking about what size inclusivity actually means. So I think you are going to love this episode, learned so much. I walked away feeling really empowered and just excited after recording this because I know that this conversation is going to really shed some light as to what happens in the industry. So enjoy the episode and I'll catch you on the flip side. Hey, Taylor, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
So excited to have you. Just so listeners know, Taylor had a little fiasco in her apartment that is, let's say, just not ideal for what's happening in 2020 right now.
Not ideal at all. I mean, I think it's the perfect reflection of 2020, yeah. If I'm being honest. So.
Exactly.
Honestly, I shouldn't have been surprised, but
I know we should just expect these things at this point, mm-hmm. You know, like if something happens.
Absolutely. In
my apartment. Yeah. I had a leak earlier this year in my apartment. I was just like, you know what? Now is not the time.
No, such yeah. A pain.
Okay, let's talk about Nomads. So give listeners a little background as to what Nomads Swimwear is.
So Nomads Swimwear is a destination-inspired, size-inclusive brand that creates chic, high-quality swimwear for bodies of all sizes. We launched in July, and we have sizes small to 4X, which is fairly unusual, unfortunately. In 2020, you would think that diverse of a size range wouldn't be so newsworthy, but it is. And so the whole collection obviously is destinations, or the whole brand is destination inspired. Each of our collections spotlights a different destination, the first being Sydney, Australia. And it was, I had taken a vacation there and was just really struck by the beautiful, like, cliffs and beaches and everything that I was seeing there, and had taken photos kind of haphazardly. And those actually ended up being our prints for the collection. And that will just kind of be the theme running forward. So that's just kind of a brief overview.
Love that. And also too, you said July, you're July of 2020, right? For launch.
July of 2020. Yes.
Crazy.
It was supposed to be May. I know. It was supposed to be May, but our factory closed down at the end of March and didn't reopen until the beginning of June. So that really messed with our initial launch timeline. But also I think it ended up working out for the best because in May, we were still very much in the thick of it as far as COVID is concerned. And I don't think I necessarily at that point would have felt 100% comfortable launching. But in July, things had kind of started to open back up a little bit. People were starting to go back to work. So it seemed to make more sense than what I would have initially thought.
Interesting. Gotta love it. Everyone's just moving around COVID. It's crazy to hear the different stories.
We just gotta fly by the seat of your pants sometimes and just go with the flow.
You just gotta do it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Why a swimwear brand specifically?
So a little bit about my background. I studied fashion design at the University of Cincinnati. And during that time is when I started plus size modeling. And for me, when I would be booked on swimwear jobs, I would notice how the styles that I was being put in and having to model were incredibly modest. They're very covered up, especially in comparison to what you see straight sizes, which I'll use straight size and plus size pretty much throughout. And those are just industry terms. So straight size is sizes 0 to 12, and then plus is anything bigger than that. So for straight sizes, that's who the majority of brands design for. So they have all the options in the world. Whereas with plus size, and what I was noticing was that, you know, there was very few cute options specifically within swimwear. It's very modest, very covered up. And I just was thinking to myself, because, you know, I kind of float between a 12-14. So a lot of times I don't always have the hardest time finding things. But I was thinking to myself, you know, if these were my only options, I would be pissed. Like, I would be so insulted, because it's not fair. And so when it came time for me to do my senior capstone collection in the spring of 2019 at the University of Cincinnati, I was kind of playing around with it, because in terms of design, when you're designing things that have no stretch at all, so like in women's wear and, you know, tops and pants and all that, that wasn't my, I like to say that was not at all my ministry. It's very, very difficult to get that fit correct. And for me, I just wasn't as drawn to it. And so working with stretch materials and like activewear and swimwear has always kind of been what I was more drawn to anyway. And having just come back from that trip to Australia, like right before I went back to school, you know, I was just in looking at the color story that I was thinking about and the prints that I had, swimwear just made sense. And I, you know, made the collection, like had to do it myself and sewed everything by hand, not by hand, but with machine, but you know, it's still, you're using
it. I mean, still, who knows how to use it?
Right, come on. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So I went through that whole process. I was doing the like heat transferring of the prints, did all that myself, and all the while was documenting the process on social media. And I had a lot of people DMing me, like asking me if I was like going to sell these. And I was like, like I hadn't thought about it, but I guess that I could. And so I started doing, I had taken an entrepreneurship class like the summer previously. So I kind of had a basic understanding of what needed to happen, like on the business side. So I started doing more research, looking into manufacturers and, you know, looked at, started talking to manufacturers like before I had even finished the first collection and before I had graduated, just because I, you know, just wanted to get as much information as possible so that I could like really, you know, make a decision. So I finished the collection. It turned out great. They didn't look as neat and as perfect as the ones that we have now that were obviously produced in a factory, but did the best I could. And they looked really great. And, you know, I had a lot of encouragement. And so it was after I graduated that, you know, I kind of got like, I tried to get as many people as I could to take the survey that I had made, just kind of asking like general questions about like price, how people felt about the styles and the prints. You know, are they more inclined to buy if free shipping is offered? And just trying to get an understanding of what, like kind of reaffirming my target market that I was envisioning the line for. And that helped me inform my decisions and helped me decide exactly how I wanted to game plan it and price range and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, that's kind of where it started. And then I started like the development process in late June of 2019. We got finished with that in December, and then I booked my production order in January. So
crazy.
That was like a good solid 6, 7, 8 months of development, which is actually not that long in terms of like development, which is crazy. But I think it helped that I had like at least kind of a good starting foundation, because I was able to send them what I had made, and then we were able to kind of build upon that as opposed to starting from scratch. So that was definitely a plus.
And did you, you mentioned an entrepreneurship class. Mm-hmm. What did you want to do growing up before you had an idea like this? Like, what was the plan?
So I don't even know if I think initially, like when I first started design school, I kind of thought that I would probably get some sort of corporate design job. And the thing about the program at the, well, University of Cincinnati in general, is they're big on co-oping, was what they call it, which is basically a fancy way to say internships. But they have it built into their programs where, you know, you have to like do a co-op program in order to graduate. So for fashion, after our, it was a 5-year program. And after our first year, every other semester, we would intern, and you would like move your whole life and go wherever, you know, you got, you know, and a job. And with fashion, it was kind of difficult because so often they don't pay. So you're kind of like you know, you're having to move to New York and you're
having to afford things that you can't really afford.
Exactly. And so I did my very first co-op. I did at a company, which was only probably like 30 minutes from my house over in Northern Kentucky. And it is called Donna Sawyer's Fabulous Furs. And they are a faux fur company. And what I didn't realize until recently was actually they were my first kind of foray into size inclusive design, because they actually have like a full size range similar to that of Nomad's. And that was kind of my first actual internship. And then the second one I did in New York at, I can't remember what the like parent company is, but on the teams I worked on, it was Red Carter Resort Wear, which Red Carter is a swimwear designer. And we also did Dolce Vita Women's Wear, which is the shoe brand. But I think at the time they were trying to like get into clothing. And then after that, the other three that I did, I modeled. And so the good thing about the co-ops was I was kind of able to see what I wanted to do, what I didn't want to do. And then with the modeling part of it, I was getting paid. So, and so that it was a easy decision for me to make. And, you know, if you have the right agencies and you get in good with clients that become regulars, you know, you really can make a living off of it. So I think my plan kind of changed to where I was like, I wasn't sure if I was going to be like a full-time model and like not do anything else. I'm not, definitely still not at that point, but it is something that I do. That's like my main job. And then, you know, obviously I have my other things that I do, but yeah, I don't know if I had like a set. I'm very go with the flow. Like, I think the good thing about I never got into modeling earlier because I was a competitive volleyball player, and I played in college for 2 years before I transferred to University of Cincinnati. So between that and the modeling, it's like you learn to be very flexible. So for me, yeah, it's like I'm totally fine with not having like a set plan of action and can kind of, you know, switch it up how I need to at any given moment. So I think that was helpful in doing this, because, you know, if you're really rigid and set in your ways on certain things, you can kind of miss other opportunities around you. So I think it definitely worked to my benefit.
I mean, completely. Think about what happened this year. I feel like as an mm-hmm. entrepreneur, you have to be go with the flow, or else you're never going to get anything done.
Absolutely. You have to be as adaptable as humanly possible. Otherwise, you know, you're just kind of while everybody else is swimming, you're going to be sinking. So
completely. That's also a good analogy for your brand.
Exactly.
I want to talk turkey about the industry, because I find everything, it's fascinating to get your insight from someone who is actually in the industry. So why is it so challenging to find size inclusive clothing, swimwear, everything?
So one of the main reasons, I can speak to this just having been through design school. So for me, and what I noticed, most design schools do not teach you how to pattern, drape, construct, you know, anything like that outside of sizes 0 to 2. The industry standard for sample sizes is a size 0 to 2. So when you see, you know, like models on runway shows that are, you know, usually, you know, the stick skinny, almost hangers, they call them hangers. Like that's what they're there to do when they're quote unquote modeling. But yeah, that's just the way that the industry has always been. And so it kind of carries over when you think about it. So if you are only learning how to design for sizes 0 to 2, then, you know, the way that you construct a garment and design a garment is completely different for straight sizes versus plus sizes. And it's not that it's difficult, but if you don't know how to do it, you're probably not going to do it. So I think there's a lack of education for sure. And then there's also kind of this rampant fat phobia in the industry. I think up until, you know, recently, it was totally normal to not see anyone, you know, above a 0 to 2, maybe even a 4, in the mainstream. Like, you know, now we have brands like Aerie and, you know, just different brands that are trying, that are making that jump into size inclusivity, especially within marketing. But another thing you'll find too is that brands will do it as a marketing ploy, and then it won't translate into the actual garments that they offer. So
how so?
It's a really, so like for instance, they'll call themselves size inclusive and they'll show like size inclusive garments on a variety of sizes. But then when you go to shop it, they won't have those extended sizes. That's actually happened a lot. Or some brands will claim to be size inclusive. They'll have the sizing, like extended sizing, and then the garment, like, it'll be completely different. So like, I hate using this example because I love me some Riri, but Savage Fenty is one that does this a lot. But they have like essentially it's supposed to be the same design in the straight size. And then when you look at the plus size version, there are these changes that like take away the sex appeal. And it's so frustrating because it's like, if you're going to do it, like
do it,
just do it. Like, right. I don't understand the point of like trying to like shift up, you know, the garment to be less revealing for plus size people, because plus size people, like, they want to feel sexy too. Like, it's not like, you know, back in the day when people were, you know, made to feel ashamed of their bodies because they weren't, you know, a smaller size. And thank goodness that, you know, like, there's more of a body positivity movement. And I guess body neutrality is also one that's kind of taking over body positivity. But yeah, it's really crazy. And the industry has moved so slowly in terms of really making size inclusion a priority. You know, it's still perfectly normal for brands to not have extended sizing, to launch without it. And, you know, I think it's just at this point, it just reads to me as like tone deaf, because it's like, people are asking for it. Like, people want to be able to shop brands that they haven't been able to shop, you know, previously. And I don't know, I think it's a missed opportunity. And especially even if you just look at it from a money aspect, like, the average American size woman is a size 16, 18. So that means that the majority of brands do not design for them. And that makes up 68% of women.
I mean, that's just mind blowing.
So it's mind blowing. Like, you're leaving money on the table, like,
it's also like, you're a business. What are you doing?
It's not even smart from like a business perspective. So people really like, I mean, and I obviously fat phobia is something that's ingrained, I would say, probably in all of us. Like, all of us have kind of like, not like unknowingly learned these ways and
like, yes, beliefs almost, yes, that are like ingrained.
It is. It's ingrained in society. So it's really difficult to kind of combat something like that when it is so deeply ingrained in just our daily life. Because it's, if you think about the emphasis that people put on how they look and, you know, the number on the scale and all those things, like, you can see why it is the way it is. But, and I think people's their biases kind of inform, you know, the decisions they make and what they do. And that, you know, translates to design as well.
I absolutely learned something new today. And I think for everyone listening, they probably did not know this, but I did not realize that it starts when you're going to design school. Mm-hmm. Like, that is actually mind blowing to think that you're primed almost to believe that those are the only sizes that you should be designing for. So why else would you venture to learn something different if that's what you're being told? Like, it's crazy.
Oh, absolutely. I remember, in my like very first drawing class. So, you know, this was my very first year. And I was told by a professor to make my croquis, which are like our fashion sketches. I was told to make my croquis look anorexic, to look sickly.
Like, actually they said that?
Yes. And this was also coming from a professor who said she wanted to have her like lower rib and pinky toes removed to better fit into designer clothing and shoes. So I should not at all be surprised, but yes, that was a direct quote. And it always just stuck with me. And I didn't really think anything of it because at the time, like, I thought it was weird, but at the time I myself was going through my own disordered eating. Trigger warning for if anybody is bothered by talks about eating disorders and whatnot. But I very much had a very messed up relationship with food and how I felt about my body and my weight. And so at the time I was a 6'8". So, and you know, now I'm a 12'14". And so for me, like, I wasn't like, the issue of inclusive sizing wasn't top of mind for me at that time, because I could go into any store and find something. Like, that wasn't ever an issue. But even still, even with that in mind, I still was like, that's kind of weird. Like, I can't believe she said that. And then as I like kind of went through the program and reflected back on certain things, you know, it really hit me how ingrained it is. And to give you another example, in my Muslim critique, sorry, there's a lot of like fashion industry terms throughout. We need like a glossary sheet or something.
But I'll link to something.
But muslins are like your first kind of like practice trials of whatever garment you're trying to make. And so for our capstone collections, this was like our first kind of whatever to get feedback from professors on, you know, what we can tweak. And so I gave them my whole spiel and told them like, you know, I'm really trying to show that like, you know, you can be, you know, sexy at any size. You don't have to change your designs, you know, that whole thing. And they had the nerve to tell me. So I had in our coast suit, which is our one-shouldered one piece, I had a girl who's a size 18, 20. She does have a very large bust. And again, these were just like working garments. Like these were not, it's not like they were finished or anything like that. Like I was still very much working out the kinks because I'd never been taught to pattern or design for plus size. But they told me that busty plus size women should not be in one shoulder swimsuits. I was told they were too revealing. Why was I not designing swim skirts, swim sports? And then we had a industry
swim sports.
Yes.
Oh my
and then
God.
We had like an industry critic from a very popular brand actually, who told me that I needed to go back and do more market research. And in my head, I'm like, I am in the market. I literally work in the market. So I don't know what you're talking about. So yeah, so that in and of itself was, I mean, I can't even express to you how like defeated and just so sad that I was by that. Because first of all, I felt like they fat shamed my models. And second of all, it's like, if this is a common experience, to your point, why would anyone want to? Like, if you're not getting first the proper education, but then also it's not encouraged. You know, you have to have a really strong sense of self.
Right.
And
if people are going to fight you on it, yeah, then how many more people are going to be beaten down to think this is still a good idea?
Exactly. So yeah, it was, I mean, it really, to me, made it like crystal clear as to why a brand like this is necessary, because, you know, it's challenging norms. It's challenging our ideals. It's pushing back on, you know, an industry that claims to be so inclusive, but is really still incredibly exclusive. So it's been an experience to say the least.
Okay. So let's say someone is listening and they are inspired by your story and they want to start a size inclusive brand. Mm-hmm. How can they make sure that they're not just walking the walk, but actually talking the talk?
It has to be a conscious decision. Like it can't just be design. Design is obviously one of the most important parts, but it has to show in your marketing. It has to show in your copy. It has to show in what user generated content you choose to repost. Like it has to be the ethos of your brand or it will not read as genuine. And if you are trying to be size inclusive, I can speak from experiences of friends who have other lines and just people in general who are plus size shoppers, like they can smell your bullshit from a mile away and they are not afraid to call you out on it. So like, make sure yes. like, you know, your I's are dotted, your T's are crossed, but luckily now there are some companies whose job it is to like help brands become more size inclusive. So there's this really cool place in New York called KEDIC Workshop. And it was co-founded by a woman named Donnie, and they work with some really amazing brands. Like I think there's someone off the top of my head, Veronica Beard, Rachel Antonoff, but they help designers who have like straight size patterns and whatnot, and they can take them and do the grading, which is making a pattern bigger to go from, you know, go across the sizes. But that's what their whole entire job is. They have fit models, you know, they can make samples. So there are options. Like if you don't know where to start from the design aspect of it, there are people out there that can help you. In my case, I made sure to find a factory that worked with other brands that were size inclusive. So it made it easier for me in the long run when it came time to do the plus size parts of the line. But yeah, there are ways, but just make sure that you're very aware and, you know, find brands that are doing it right and, you know, kind of take notes as to what it is that they do, why it's successful. I think Instagram is an amazing market research tool. I used it a lot in kind of figuring out how to do things for nomads, because I think, you know, the blueprints are kind of out there already. You just kind of, you have to take it and change it enough to where it works for you and your brand. But yeah, I think it's definitely possible, but
that's good. Those are great pieces of feedback for people listening. And out of curiosity, how did you find the factory that you work with now?
It's a funny story. So actually they were just they're the first one I found just in a cursory Google search. And I did some research on other ones, but for the one I use in particular, I knew another designer that they worked with on her line and knew that it was size inclusive. So I had, normally it's kind of hard, like if, because a lot of people, especially in the fashion industry, can be very protective of their thing, not things, but just their contacts and whatever. So I wasn't sure if she was going to be willing to like give me honest feedback of what she thought, but I asked her and she said she's loved working with them and, you know, had nothing but great things to say and that she thought I should absolutely work with them. So it made it easy. And yeah, I actually went with the first factory that I found, which I don't think is typically the case.
That's amazing. The first Google result.
Yeah, literally. I mean, granted, it was a very specific search, but yeah. I like found what I was looking for. And I was like, oh, okay.
No, I love that. I love that.
Yeah. So it was kind of a fluke, but ended up working out.
I think for a lot of people too, they think that there's so much more research that needs to go into it. It's not to say that you shouldn't do your research, but it's also not, it's like, don't overthink it and just start talking to people almost. It sounds like is a continual theme with entrepreneurs, like just see if you can network, send messages to people and see if they'll give you contacts and just introduce you almost.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things is you're really not going to know like what to look out for until you start. Like you can be as prepared as possible, but there's going to be some things you didn't think of that it's like, oh, okay. So now I know that they can or cannot do this for me. And, you know, you just kind of have to get into the thick of it a little bit to be able to kind of see if it's the right fit. Yeah. Because you may not know until a certain situation arises and you're like, I don't really like how that was handled. I might want to reconsider for next time or something, you know?
Totally. What do you think in the future of talking about size inclusivity and what it looks like, what do you think, where do you think things are headed and where would you ideally like to see things be?
I hope that the majority of brands will at least carry a 3X or 4X. I don't think it's something that needs to be made out to be incredibly difficult. Like I think it's like if I, as someone who with a very small budget, and, you know, just because I think most people's excuse is that it's expensive. And I'm not saying that it isn't, but it's not the most expensive thing in the world, but it's necessary.
Wait, sorry. When you say expensive, what do you mean by that?
So, for instance, for me, when making the collection, each to get the pattern that, so I started as our fit model. So every suit that we saw throughout the development process was an extra large, which is my size. To grade the pattern down to a small and then up to a 4X each time, that costs money. So then if you have four styles and you're doing eight sizes per style, you know, that adds up and that just adds on to your already growing costs. But for these more established brands, I really don't feel like there's an excuse. I just think there's kind of a laziness and, you know, just kind of an unwillingness to change. And that's what's keeping people from doing it. But my hope is that most brands, when launching, will launch inclusively. But then I hope, too, that, you know, the already more established brands will consider extending their size ranges, you know, to at least a 3X or 4X. Because, again, 68% of women are, you know, a 16, 18 or above. So it's pretty crazy that the majority of the fashion industry is not providing options for them.
Get with the times, people. If you're in the fashion industry and you're listening, take note. This is crazy. Taylor, I want to hear from you if a celebrity or influencer, any celebrity or influencer could wear Nomad's swimsuit, who would it be? Like that you would love to see in one of your swimsuits?
I would probably have a panic attack. It's two people for me. I would have a panic attack if it were Lizzo or Beyonce. Those, I would. Someone would have to pick me up off the floor. Honestly, I would be beside myself. That would be incredible.
Yes. You guys got to send Lizzo an influencer package. She's like super active on TikTok. Maybe that could be like your way in.
TikTok. See, I clearly need to, I like have a love. I don't have a love anything with TikTok, but I'm like fascinated by it, but I also don't even want to even try to get started on it. Cause I know I'll get addicted and I'm like, I don't think I can do another platform. Like I don't have the mental capacity right now, but there's so much stuff that happens on it. I like feel like I'm always a step behind. So I guess I need to get on there.
She's hilarious on it. Yeah. You're going to have to check it out, but let's wrap up. This is like my last final deep question, but what is the future of Nomads Swimwear?
So I see a couple different things in our future. Initially when I was launching the brand, I was thinking it would be cool to offer size inclusive, gender neutral swim shorts, if you will, with the corresponding like prints and color palettes of the swimsuits. You know, I think, and I've heard this from men, that, you know, size inclusion is also an issue.
Completely.
Not just for women, but for men as well. Like if you think about big and tall, like there's not very many big and tall sections or big and tall sizes and things like that. So I think that could be a really cool product and style for us to explore and offer at some point. I've also had some requests for activewear, which I would be,
amazing.
More than happy to do. I'm very much into working out. And so that would be really a really fun thing to develop as well. So I think there's a couple of different ways we can take it. I'm definitely trying to be mindful just of the times that we're in, and you know, with common flu season coming and a possible COVID resurgence, like, you know, I mean, obviously it's still here, but you know, another wave, so to speak. I don't want to get too into anything until, you know, we're kind of at a steadier economy and whatnot. Trying to be like as smart as possible, but yeah, there's definitely things that I would like to do in the future. So
that makes sense. So where can people find Nomads?
So you can find Nomads. It's at Nomads Swimwear on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and the website is nomadswimwear.com.
Amazing. All right. Thank you, Taylor.
Thank you.
Taylor is amazing. I am so happy we had her on the podcast. And you guys go to Nomads Swimwear's website. They have the cutest suits. Their entire website makes me want to go on vacation. So go check it out. Thank you, Taylor, for coming on the podcast and shedding so much light about what happens in this space and how we can be better and more size inclusive as a society. And for brands listening, I hope you took some notes. Thank you so much again for listening to this episode. If you loved this episode and you feel like you got a lot of juicy takeaways, please leave a rating and review. It helps so much and I really would appreciate it. We are always trying to grow this podcast and reach new people, and a rating and review helps a ton. So thank you so much for listening to today's episode. I will catch you guys next week.